Hello and welcome to this interview. My name is Jess Thompson and I'm the Director of Psychology at the Optimum Health Clinic. And today I'm joined by Nick Cook, who's a psychology practitioner at the OHC. Welcome, Nick, and thanks so much for joining me today.
It's a pleasure. Great to be here.
So Nick's experience of chronic fatigue syndrome prior to joining the team at the Optimum Health Clinic was as a carer for his wife, Lissa, who suffered with chronic fatigue syndrome and has now recovered. There's actually a case study interview with Lissa's psychology practitioner, Nikki Foster, which gives the practitioner perspective on Lissa's recovery, which people may also be interested in watching in conjunction with today's interview. So Nick supported her on this journey and on last year's fatigue conference did an interview giving some tips about the best way to provide this much needed support. And we're now revisiting this as there are some things that Nick now feels he may have done differently. So Nick, for those people who didn't see last year's interview, can you give us some background about Lissa's experience of chronic fatigue and just go over the five main things you focused on as her carer?
So Lissa's illness and her subsequent recovery was, it was a long process. And like a lot of people who I've now dealt with as part and parcel of doing the course and working with clients, there were so many factors that contributed to her illness. She was working in a high pressure job at the BBC. She was training for marathons. She was going out partying. Her father's estate blew up and she had to deal with that. She got diagnosed with a little tumor on her pituitary gland. So there were so many things going on. And yeah, it was, looking in hindsight, it was probably a very sort of slow, gradual decline over maybe sort of 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
And then there was an incident of, she got Epstein-Barr and her father's estate. And that was what really sort of pushed her over the edge.
Okay, that was the final straw.
Yeah, there was a couple of things going on at that time. And then she got burial.
Sounds like there's been quite a lot of boatloads to contend with.
Yeah, I mean, so now that I'm aware of that boatload model that we work with, if I look back on what was going on in her life, in our life, yeah, I think like a lot of people who I've now worked with and they fill out that boatload, that sense of sort of, okay, it's not that much of a surprise.
Yeah.
That almost realization and relief at seeing that, okay, this has contributed to it. It's not that much of a mystery.
Yeah.
That's been quite an interesting experience in hindsight as well. And then, yeah, she battled against having chronic fatigue, both in terms of trying to keep on going. And she went through a lot of sort of boom and bust cycles. You know, she'd sort of get herself going, have a few weeks off work, get back into it. But she also really battled against the diagnosis.
Okay.
Of DFS when she was told she had it, it was a case of, I don't want to have that. That's not real. People don't get better from that.
Okay.
And there was quite a long period where it was, you know, sort of wasn't even mentioned. And finally, yeah, she came to this place of more acceptance and wanting to do something about it. And that's when she went to the Optimum Health Clinic, did the 90-day plan, worked with Nikki. And yeah, came out the other side. A lot of changes in her life, in our life. So we moved up to the Peak District. She changed from working in journalism and PR to, some people might not think this is lower stress, but for her it is, working as a teacher.
Okay, yeah.
And is now, yeah, sort of fully working, and touch wood, fully recovered. She's even back doing very sort of, you know, gentle exercise and running, but very much in a way now that she just enjoys the running rather than saying I need to do a marathon in 3 hours 30 or whatever.
Yeah.
So her whole mindset has changed, and that's sort of how I came to the clinic, in that she had changed so profoundly as a person and made so many changes that I actually felt slightly left behind in our sort of dynamic as a couple. And my first degree had been psychology, and it's something I always wanted to go back to at some point. So I started looking at master's degrees in sports psychology and various things. But they were all incredibly academic and research focused rather than practicing focused. And it was actually Lissa who said, well, isn't the answer staring you in the face? which was the practitioner's course. So yeah, I did that over probably about 3 years, I think, in total, getting it all done. And then, yeah, came out the other end of it and was fortunate enough to then get a position working with the team, which has been fantastic.
And we're delighted to have you. So what were those five things when you were Lissa's carer? Talk about those five main areas that you really focused on as her carer and how that helped her.
Yeah, I mean, I think I did some things better than others. I made a lot of mistakes, and that's what we're sort of going to be getting onto later. But yeah, the sort of things that I think I did do fairly well. The first one was asking for help. And you know, that it takes quite a lot of sort of doing that, sort of putting your hand up saying, I'm not coping with this.
Yeah.
And particularly during that period where Lissa was really ill. Now, I was trying to balance work as well and sort of looking after her. And, you know, sort of, I was very fortunate in that we had Lissa's mum who was just came up and lived with us. And it wasn't just practical support that she gave, you know, sort of, so she'd do the laundry and things like that. It was somebody for me to have a bit of a moan to, have a bit of a sort of bitch to every now and then. You know, because when Lissa was having those really dark days, she could be a really hard person to deal with. And, you know, she would lash out at those people nearest to her. So that would be her, me and her mum. And, you know, we'd sit in the kitchen, so we're saying, who's going to go and deal with the devil upstairs next? Yeah. Things like this. And so, and that was just really, really valuable.
Yeah.
So I think if you have got any, whether it's friends, family or whatever, just sort of putting your hand up and asking for help.
Yeah.
And then sort of step on from that was then asking for the help of the clinic. You know, people who have dealt with this, people who have recovered from this, and people who know how to sort of move on into recovery. So that was the first one. Yeah, the next one was finding things that we could do together that weren't necessarily chronic fatigue related. And this was something actually that I was quite bad at initially. I very much buried my head in the sand when Lissa first got ill. And even sort of as she was going through her recovery, sort of it's, I would go off and spend a lot of time on my own. So whether it's out on my bike or things like that, it actually took me breaking my leg.
Okay.
To sort of really realize the value of, to both of us of doing things together. So whether it was just slobbing around watching a box set, or one of the things we really started doing when I broke my leg, when Melissa was starting to get a bit better by that stage, was going out for little drives in the car, driving as close to the top of a hill we could get to, and then just walking the rest of the way up together.
Yeah.
And sitting on top of the hill together.
Yeah, lovely.
And those are actually really happy memories now. Even though I had a bus leg and Lissa was still ill, those moments together were really, really special.
Yeah, it sounds like it was quite a lonely experience for both of you initially, while you buried your head in the sand and she was battling with her own demons herself. So it took for you to break your leg for you to actually find those things that you could come back into connection with.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, and we had some really good times during that period. And it's something, yeah, we look back on it fondly now, which is really quite strange.
It sounds like a good separation in a way emotionally, while you were both dealing with the enormity of her illness, followed by a real sense of coming back together again.
Yeah, and it did give us that sense of, yeah, we can beat this together.
So we came together as a team at that point, rather than two separate people dealing with the same thing. Yeah.
But equally, I do think that as a carer or a partner, that giving, and this is the third tip we came up with, that giving yourself space is vital. And giving yourself space and time away from your partner's recovery without feeling guilty. It's really, really important. And this is another aspect that Lissa's mum was great on. You know, she could see me getting all stressed, uptight about what was going on. She'd say, look, she's fine with me. Just go out on your bike. Enjoy yourself, you know, sort of go and have some space, go and sort of reground yourself. And, you know, by doing that, you'll be able to look after her better going forward. You know, you don't want to get into a point where you're sort of burying yourself and also developing, you know, sort of building up some resentment. You don't want to go to that place.
Mm.
You want to be, you need to give yourself that time and that space. And also, you know, listen, mum would say, go and meet your mates at the pub. She's fine in with me, you know, sort of. Yeah, so it's letting that go and giving yourself that space is really important.
It's like the analogy we often use of the oxygen mask on the aeroplane. So when they say, if the oxygen mask comes down, you need to, and you've got a dependent with you, like a child, you need to put your own oxygen mask on first. And it sounds like you just needed some encouragement from her mum to really do that, make sure you were taking care of you.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think you do take on a real identity as a carer.
Mm.
And, you know, I know that this was something that I struggled with as she got better. It was switching back from carer to husband.
Yeah.
And I think in that time when I was in full carer mode, actually sort of saying, handing her over to someone else or not being around was actually really quite difficult, but it was something I had to do.
Mm.
My own mental well-being as much as anything else.
Yeah.
And then the next one, and something again that it applies to some people and not to others, but we talk about the different types of tiredness. And that for Lissa, that changing her environment was just so important and just such a useful thing. And that whole period when I had the broken leg, us getting out in the, up on the hill and things like that. And it was always a bit of a balancing act. Sometimes she would say, oh, I don't know if I've got the energy for this. And it was sometimes I didn't get it right. Sometimes I did sort of push her and we went and it wasn't great. But more times than not, that little change in environment was really important for her and made a big difference. But even just getting her from the bedroom into the sitting room made a massive difference to her. Changing the sort of the light, we changed the lighting in the bedroom, and that made a big difference to her. And then sort of, I guess, the ultimate changing environment we had was, and again, this is when I was still rehabbing myself from my broken leg, and Lissa was still quite ill, we decided to move house.
Mm.
Because Lissa really came to associate the house that we were in, and we loved that house, but she associated it with being ill.
Yeah.
And actually, or even though it took a lot of energy and effort to move house, and they say it's one of the most stressful things you can do, I would say it was probably the turning point in her recovery.
Right, that makes a difference. Yeah, and it's interesting that you were talking about how sometimes you got it right and sometimes you got it wrong. Sometimes changing the environment seemed to help, and other times it felt like too much. And I guess that brings to mind the importance of being able to identify what type of tired you're feeling, which is something we work with clients to do.
Yeah, and which I think, if I was now going back with the knowledge and experience I have now, I would have done a lot better.
Mm. Hindsight, great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's always good. And then the last of the five was being, and I still do this role, which is being an objective recovery guide.
Yeah, so a bit more about that.
Because, well, I think when you're in it, it's really hard to see out of that moment. So when Lissa was having a bad day or not so good day, particularly as she was starting to get better, she wouldn't necessarily see that, you know, she was having maybe one bad day a week at that point, rather than three or four bad days a week, which she had been having sort of 6-7 months ago. And just by being able to say, actually, look, you're in a much better place now than you were then, and having sort of been able to objectively say, this is not just me sort of giving you false positives, this is what happened, you know, because I kept almost like a recovery diary for her.
Okay, was that helpful?
Yeah, really helpful. Yeah. Just be able to say, look, you had this many bad days then, and you know, even now, you know, sort of, so she'll come to the end of a sort of hard term at school. I mean, last term was weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything that was going on.
All teachers, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And she got to the end of the term and she needed a couple of days in bed.
Mm.
And there's still a lot of, there's still a bit of normalization of tiredness going on with her in that sort of, you know, that sort of tiredness when she has to go to bed, when she has to sleep, can be scary for her. Mm. You know, am I getting ill again?
Yeah.
Et cetera. And again, it's just pointing back and saying, okay, but you know, when you were doing your teacher training the year before, you know, you'd get to the end of the term and it'd whack you out for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
Now you're having sort of one day of sort of bounce, and then you're sort of back into it. So it's, yeah, I think being able to provide the objectivity is really, really useful.
Yeah, that kind of one step back perspective, really, being able to remind the person, you know, just how well they're doing. Because when I had chronic fatigue, I think you very quickly normalize your progress. So it becomes very normal to be able to do this amount. So any less feels like a real step back. So having someone to say, actually, you know, 2 months ago or 3 months ago, this was the picture you were looking at, it would really helpful.
Yeah. And I think, and I'm noticing that working with clients as well, that coaching aspect of what we do is, you know, sort of, you know, it's almost as important as the actual pure psychology aspect of what we do.
Yeah.
Sort of giving that sort of, that step back, objective opinion, objective feedback of what's going on.
Absolutely.
Because I know with Lissa as well that she still doesn't remember an awful lot. She doesn't remember how bad she was.
The brain's deleted those difficult memories,
Which, you know, there's a positive to that. Yeah. But there's also the negative, because it also means she doesn't remember how far she's come.
Yeah. So you're there to remind her, which sounds like it's a really helpful thing.
Yeah.
So let's move on now then to what, now that you've been a practitioner with us for a while, and obviously you've been working with many people with chronic fatigue syndrome, what would you do differently now, do you think, with the experience that you've got, or what would feel different?
I think it's almost like we use a tool with clients, a process with clients called Timeline.
Yeah.
Timeline work, where we'll go back to a period in their lives and we'll say, what resources would help you then get through that period in your life? And it's similar to that, I think, in that there's knowledge and learnings and resources that I have now that if I could take back to then, I think it would have been better for Lissa and also better for myself. And I don't know if it necessarily would have meant she would have recovered quicker, but I definitely think that it would have taken less out of us, her recovery, and it would have been, you know, sort of less of a battle, I think. So the first one, it's confidence in the tools and the recovery process. You know, I've not only witnessed Lissa recovering, but also the patients I'm working with in the clinic. And you know, sort of the recovery stories that there are, and just seeing that the tools and the techniques and the program do work. And just I think when I was back then, you know, you're clutching at straws.
Yes.
And everybody's promising you the answer. So you go and read a book on mitochondria.
Yeah.
Supplementation. You go and read a book on Graves exercise therapy. And listed all of these things, and she tried all of these things, and you know, and also you get the input from the medical profession as well. You know, Lissa went to see her endocrinologist, who found the little tumor. That's the answer. And by the time she came to the clinic, I was probably in a sort of place where I was thinking, it's just another false hope. It's another straw we're grasping at. And it took me a long time to sort of come around and see that what she was doing and the tools that she was using were actually beneficial.
Yeah, it sounds like you've been hopeful so many times with so many different things, and then just not being able to build the evidence with those things that actually it was going to work. Whereas when you were going through it with Lissa with the Optimum Health Clinic program, you were both gradually building evidence towards that sense of confidence, really, that this worked. And now you've got that, you know, you've got so much more evidence, but not having that then, that must have been hard.
It was really hard. And I think, you know, we were both in that sort of position. I mean, I remember when Lissa Kate went down for her weekend at the clinic for her 90 day. She went to stay with her mum, and I got a phone call from her. I can't remember what day it was. And she was just saying, I don't know if this is going to work. You know, it's so much information. It's so many things to take on board. There's some quite strange stuff when she was talking about the EFT.
Yeah, tapping.
I just don't know. And I was just thinking, oh, no, it's another one. But, yeah, no, we persevered.
Yeah, you stuck with it. Yeah. And yes, I guess you must have built some evidence. In order to stick with it, I guess you must have built some evidence quite soon or even during the programme that this was something that made sense.
Yeah, I think what really, really helped with Lissa and really, really turned it with Lissa was the fact she was working with Nikki. And it was somebody who had been there, done it, and come out the other side. And I think that resource within the clinic is just, it's invaluable.
Yeah.
Absolutely invaluable. And that gave me, you know, I was probably slower and later to come on board, which is, we'll get on to the next point in a minute. But yeah, I think that made a massive difference to her.
Sounds like having that really confident companion that she found in Nikki on that recovery journey. Like you say, someone who'd been through it themselves and used the tools that Lissa was being taught to get there.
Yeah, definitely. And then the next one is engagement. So that I would actually have engaged in what she was doing more fully and more quickly.
Perhaps there was a sense initially of not being hard to engage with because you didn't really understand it. You hadn't been on the course yourself.
Yeah, there was that. And I think also, if I'm honest, there was also a sense of, okay, they know what they're doing, or at least Lissa thinks they know what they're doing, they can deal with this now.
So perhaps a bit of relief in there.
Yeah. And so, you know, sort of, I thought, I haven't got the energy to sort of, you know, to throw myself into this. I'm just going to let them get on with it for a bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was totally oblivious to a lot of the things she was doing. I mean, I remember it's a week or so after she got back, and I was lying in bed one morning, I was thinking, is she humming happy birthday to herself? What is she doing?
Okay. let's explain what that is for people wondering. Talk us through what that is.
Yeah, so it's part of actually one of the older Fuller EFT tapping recipes.
Yeah, emotional freedom technique, yeah.
Yeah. So she was lying in bed, sort of tapping on various parts of her body and humming happy birthday. And I was just thinking, what on earth is going on here? Why is she taping now, stop, choice, and coach, which is part of the stop process, which is another process we use, on our kitchen floor?
Yeah. It must have been very confusing.
Yeah, it was really confusing. But now having sort of, you know, sort of come to use those tools myself while I was doing the practitioner training, while I was learning how to use them, and obviously now using them a lot with clients. I think by learning them and working through them with her and using them myself, I could have facilitated her recovery.
Yeah.
I also would have really helped myself.
Yeah.
Because when I look back to some of the thought patterns that I ran while I was sort of caring for, having a resource like the stop pattern, some of the sort of the emotions that I went through, having a resource like EFT would have been so useful to me as well.
Yeah. Well, it was an enormous journey for you too, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
It's hard for the person suffering with CFS, but it can be equally hard watching the person you love suffer.
Yeah, definitely. And I know as I did start to engage more, as Lissa got better, particularly with the stop process, we would run that on each other while we're out walking the dog in the morning. And, you know, a very changed and sort of tweaked version of it that sort of, you know, Lissa found worked for her. But yeah, and it was just really, really useful. And I think if I'd come to that point earlier, I could have sort of saved myself quite a lot of work that I had to do with myself and on myself after this had recovered.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And the next one, and this is something that comes up again and again with clients that I noticed. And I was speaking to a client yesterday, and she was saying that my mother just keeps on saying things that are just too optimistic for me. Mm. They're too false positives. You know, so she just doesn't get it. And I think going back, if I could give myself more of a sense of empathetic realism, I suppose is how I'd describe it.
Yeah.
Because often the knee-jerk reaction is, oh no, you're fine. You're going to get better. Mm. It's all okay.
Mm.
You know, sort of, you're just having a bad day. All of these sort of very sort of glib, cliched platitudes that actually now looking back would have caused parts of her immense stress.
Yeah.
Just by me saying that, because you know, that wasn't where she was at that moment.
Mm.
But I think realizing that and having the sort of confidence in the process again to allow somebody and just to sit with them and just to be with them and with how they are.
Yeah. So
rather than trying to fix, because that fixing, you waste a lot of energy trying to do that. Rush. Now, I'd almost see myself, you know, rushing around like this fly, sort of trying to sort of make sure everything was in place.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't helpful to her and it wasn't helpful to me at that time.
So actually really creating some space to sit with the actual feelings that were there, however distressing, however difficult. And it's something that we know as psychology practitioners is so important. You know, that ability to just sit with the feeling that's there without trying to change it or make it go away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's something you'd do more of if you were to do this again.
Definitely. And I think, again, if I'd engaged more and had more knowledge of the tools then and what she was doing, then I would have been far better resourced to be able to do that for her and for myself as well.
And is that something that you think that Lissa could have helped you with? So do you feel that perhaps was she a bit resistant to talking you through what she was doing and why she was tapping or singing Happy Birthday? Or
I think there was a degree of she didn't necessarily have the energy
to
sort of explain what she was doing and why she was doing it. And I think she was probably also sensing in me that maybe I wasn't at a place at that time when I would have been open to it. And you know, we probably needed to meet in the middle a bit on that.
Yeah. But perhaps even something for those people listening that are kind of caring for people that have got chronic fatigue, perhaps even just that kind of process of reading the material going through that may have been enough for you to feel a bit more engaged with it.
Yeah, even just 2 hours of watching sort of a video on what EFT is, what the stop process is, what the maladaptive stress response is. Mm. I think, you know, so by gaining that understanding, it wouldn't have been a lot of investment on my part to actually sort of be a lot more resourced and helpful in her recovery.
Mm. But it does sound as though at the time, actually, you really did need to create that sense of space for yourself. So it's, I hope you're not too hard on yourself and not.
No, well, actually, that segues very nicely into the sort of my final one, which is a bit more sort of kindness to myself. And because, you know, I was pretty hard on myself during that period. And again, you know, sort of taking on that carer role as opposed to a husband role, you know, sort of it was hard. And I did get that pretty wrong. I was hard on myself. And I ended up having to do a lot of work after this and recovered to dig myself out of that hole.
Yeah. What sorts of things did you kind of, what kind of thoughts were you having about the way that you were caring for Lissa that maybe weren't so helpful?
It was more once she'd recovered, actually, that it was, again, so it was letting go of that carer role. I think Lissa knew and accepted she'd recovered before I knew. Before I accepted that she'd recovered and that I could, that part of me that was a carer could stand down. And I was sort of very wary about her doing things, very overprotective about her doing things, and sort of, you know, caused myself quite a lot of sort of stress during that period and wasted quite a lot of energy. And probably annoyed her quite a lot as well.
Well, it sounds like there was a period when she was unwell, when you were actually kind of, as you said earlier, sometimes pushed her too hard, said, come on, let's do this. Yeah. And then perhaps through that experience, then became really quite cautious. So even when she became confident, you still had that sense of caution.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think. And I think, yeah, sort of just that, in the same way that we talk to people about when they're sort of at the latter stages of recovery and they're bouncing boundaries, and they're increasing what they're doing, they're increasing their capacity, and we talk about doing it in a very stepping stone way, so that if you do go that bit too far, you're only going, it doesn't matter, because it's only a stepping stone too far. You can step back rather than jumping over a big river.
Yeah,
and it's a similar sort of thing, I guess, the position that I found myself in that I think I probably sort of tried to leap too quickly from carer back to husband. You know, sort of suddenly, yeah, she's better. And that just didn't sit. And there was part of me that was just wasn't right for.
Yeah.
And I think I should have just been a little bit more sort of progressive and sort of, and yeah, and just slowly sort of allowed us that transition.
Yeah. So in terms of kind of being kinder to yourself, you're saying that you would, if you did it again, you would be kinder because you were so hard on yourself.
Yeah.
How would you kind of advise someone to do that? How would you work with someone, a carer, to help them to be more kind to themselves?
I mean, I ended up, I mean, I think it was also part and parcel of the fact that I was doing the practitioner's course. Mm-hmm. So during the course of the practitioner's course, we obviously do a lot of work and stuff on each other. And also we're encouraged as practitioners to obviously look after ourselves from a mental health perspective as well. So after Lisa recovered, I actually sort of did a lot of work with a therapist myself. In hindsight, I would have done that whilst she was ill and while she was recovering.
Yeah, so you'd have recognized that you really needed that support then.
Yeah, and I think that would have made a huge difference.
Yeah.
And again, that sort of comes back to, you know, I was good at asking for help from Lisa's mum on a sort of very practical level. And yeah, she was somebody to talk to. But having somebody, I think, to talk to, who had that distance, who had that sort of professional knowledge, who had that, yeah, that knowledge, would have been really, really valuable.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Nick, for joining me today to talk about this. I know there's lots of people out there who will be in that position of caring for someone with a fatigue-related condition. And as you've described, it's actually a real journey for the carer too. And I think you're talking today about those things you would have done differently is really going to help people. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. Enjoyed it. Thank you very much.